Senate will please come to order. Good morning. Are we all smiling out there? A few of us are. I saw a big smile from Senator Alice. There it is right there. Look at that smile. I was in sort of a so-so mood. Now I'm in a great mood. Prayer this morning. Oh, call the roll, please.
Agar.
Excused.
Anderson.
Here.
Anselmi Downton.
Here.
Baldwin.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Boner.
Here.
Bouchard.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Dockstetter.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Ellis.
Here.
Emmerich.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks.
Here.
Kinski.
Here.
Landon.
Here. They're going out.
Meyer.
Thanks.
Meyer here. Moniz.
Here.
Nethercott.
Here.
Pappas.
Here.
Perkins.
Excused.
Peterson.
Excused.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Fladern.
Here.
Wasserberger.
Here.
President Bebout.
Here. Prayer this morning by the Reverend Rick Veit. Please stand.
Thank you. I'd like to offer a prayer for sound government, a collect for sound government for our nation and for our state. Let us pray. O Lord, our governor, bless the leaders of our land, that we may be a people at peace among ourselves and a blessing to other nations of the earth. To President Trump and members of the cabinet, Governor Meade, Mayor Orr, and to all in administrative authority, grant wisdom and grace in the exercise of their duties. To senators, especially those here today, to representatives and those who make our laws, give courage, wisdom, and foresight to provide for the needs of all our people, to fulfill our obligations to the communities of Wyoming. To the judges and officers of our courts, give understanding and integrity that human rights may be safeguarded and justice served. And finally, teach all our people to rely on your strength and to accept their responsibilities to their fellow citizens, that they may make wise decisions for the well-being of our society, that we may serve you faithfully in our generation and honor your holy name. Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Members of the Senate, we do have a doctor today, Dr. David Fall from Gillette. Dr. Fall, welcome. Everybody must have realized we had 2 days off. We also have a nurse for the day, Kristen Colbrand, Weston County Health Service. Is Kristen here? Okay. Senator Kinski, you may.
I'd simply like to point out that my Sheridan High School classmate, Dr. Fall, is a pediatrician, so he's here in the event of any outbreaks of childish behavior, he can take care of you. Thank you.
So noted, Senator Kinski. Today in Wyoming history, 1901, for the people up in the northwestern part of our state, Stinking Water River was renamed the Shoshone River. Thank you, Senator Coe. Today is day 25 of the proposed 37-day session. Reading correction approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February 10, 2017 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Bouchard, chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. House bills on first reading. I didn't hear that. House Bill 136, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 136, engrossed, Campus Carry, an act relating to weapons, sponsored by Representative Bitterman. Passed the House, ayes 40, noes 19.
House Bill 136, referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 137, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 137, engrossed, Wyoming Repeal Gun-Free Zones Act, an act relating to weapons, sponsored by Representative Bitterman. Passed the House, ayes 47, noes 13.
House Bill 137, referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports from standing committees.
February 10, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, to whom was referred House Bill 220, Ad Valorem Taxation, leans on mineral production, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 9, to whom was referred House Bill 253, engrossed, Economic Development Account Funding, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 9, to whom was referred House Bill 254, Public Purpose Investments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Von Flatern, Chair.
Just one second, Mr. Reading Clerk. Senator Perkins, did you come up here, please? Go ahead.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, to whom was referred House Bill 156, engrossed, Involuntary Commitment Emergency Detention Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 4, to whom was referred House Bill 76, engrossed, American Indian Education Program, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, Pappas, Rothfuss, and Wasserberger, Senator Coe, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 10, to whom was referred House Bill 70, Occupational Safety and Health Administration Actions, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 10, to whom was referred House Bill 221, Non-Resident Employer Bonding Requirements, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Peterson, and Scott. Noes, Senator Bouchard. Senator Scott, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 10, to whom was referred House Bill 171, engrossed, Unemployment Insurance Delinquency Contributions, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
With that order, excuse me, with that order of business, billed on second reading, House Bill 113, second reading of the House Bill. Let me start over. With that order of business, billed on second reading, House Bill 113, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 113, Medicaid Waiver Program, Military Personnel.
We do have an amendment. Reading clerk, please read it in.
House Bill 113, second reading amendment number 1, to engrossed copy, page 4, after line 2.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 113. This is in the standing committee amendment, and the bill here, what it's doing is it's the military has a problem, and it's a small problem but a significant one. They, within the military population, you have people with severe developmental disabilities, at about the same rate as you have in the general population. And the way we take care of such people, Mr. President, is we put them on the Medicaid program on one of the waivers, and there's a waiting list on those waivers, and that's pretty much universal among the states. And the military moves its people on a regular basis, and they often find that they've gone through, about the time they go through the waiting list and get their child, and it could be an adult child, their dependent, on the waiver program, they get moved to a different post, and you go through the waiting list all over again. And this bill is trying to cure that problem, which is keeping military families, putting them at a disadvantage with regard to the rest of the population. There is a provision in the Standing Committee Amendment that deals with someone who has been here, stationed in Wyoming, goes to another station, and there are a couple of other bases that do the same as our Air Force base here, Mr. President. And then they come back to Wyoming either permanently or because the Air Force transferred them back. And they've had a child that's gone through either all the way through the waiver and gotten services here or part way through. And what the Standing Committee Amendment does is says they can come back in the place that they were on that waiver if, and there's a number of things, they declare Wyoming to be their resident, et cetera. And the requirement in the Standing Committee Amendment, which we passed in Committee of the Whole, Mr. President, is that they had to have been a Wyoming resident before they went in the military for 2 years. So this removes that requirement, which does broaden the bill. It will bring in anywhere from 1 to 3 more families at any given time, Mr. President. Possibly even on some occasions none, but typically 1 to 3 more. That doesn't cost us more money. It just means that the next people behind in the waiver have to wait just a little longer. But I think it's only fair. But, Mr. President, I think that we ought to remove the prior Wyoming residency requirements so a military member who had been here, gone through their child gone through the waiting list, will be able to get the services if they declare Wyoming now to be their home, rather than having to have enlisted from here. So it is a slight expansion, and the bill is very important to the military department, because and probably important to our economy, because we do get rated as to how friendly we are to military, and that does influence whether we keep our base or not. So I didn't want to in any way jeopardize the bill by broadening it, removing that one requirement. So I brought it as a second reading amendment, and I call for the yeas and nays on it, Mr. President, so that if it passes, there'll be the support to pass the bill, and if people don't like it, we won't kill the bill, is the theory. But I bring it to you as a matter of simple fairness to the military people who do serve here, who do go through our waiting list once, that they don't have to do it all over again for their dependent, Mr. President. And that's the issue.
Further discussion?
Question.
Question being called for. We're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 113. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar excused. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstader?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. closing. Vote closed. 29 aye, 1 excused.
By your vote, second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 113 has passed. House Bill 113 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the House bill be read a third time? Hear no objections? It is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Mr. President, we do have a consent list. I move third reading consent list as follows. House Bill 2, Storage Tanks. House Bill 3, Cease and Transfer Priority List. House Bill 4, NRC Agreement State Amendments. House Bill 7, Credit for Reinsurance. House Bill 9, Student Ownership and Privacy Rights. House Bill 13, Investment of Public Funds. House Bill 24, Water Commission Duties. House Bill 2039, House Bill 39, Education, Resident Tuition Reimbursement. House Bill 112, EMS Licensure Interstate Compact. House Bill 123, Probate, Estates of Non-Residents. House Bill 124, Uniform Trust Code Amendments. House Bill 125, Sealing of Trust Documents. House Bill 237, Community College Capital Construction. And House Bill 262, Penitentiary Savings Fund.
Would anyone like any of the House bills removed from the consent list? Having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 2, Storage Tanks. House Bill 3, Cease and Transfer Priority List. House Bill 4, NRC Agreement State Amendments. House Bill 7, Credit for Reinsurance. House Bill 9, Student Ownership and Privacy Rights. House Bill 13, Investment of Public Funds. House Bill 24, Water Commission Duties. House Bill 39, Education, Resident Tuition Reimbursement. House Bill 112, EMS Licensure Interstate Compact. House Bill 123, Probate Estates of Non-Residents. House Bill 124, Uniform Trust Code Amendments. House Bill 125, Sealing of Trust Documents. House Bill 237, Community College Capital Construction. And House Bill 262, Penitentiary Savings Funds. Chief Clerk, please call the roll for the consent list.
Agar, excused. Anderson?
Aye.
Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Boner?
Aye.
Bouchard?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Ellis?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Hastert? Hicks?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Moniz?
Aye.
Nethercott? Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Bebout?
Aye.
On the consent list, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 2, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 2, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 3, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 3, 29 ayes, 1 excused. House Bill 4, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 4, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 7, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 7, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 9, are there any changes?
Hicks, aye to no.
Kinski, aye to no. Dockstetter, aye to no. Barnard, aye to no. Wasserberger, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no.
Ebout, aye to no.
Ebout, aye to no. Christensen, aye to no. Baldwin, aye to no. Peterson, aye to no. Anderson, aye to no. Scott, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 9, 16 aye, 13 no, 1 excused.
Did you say 16 ayes?
Yes, sir, 16
ayes. Okay, thank you.
House Bill 13, are there any changes? Barnard, aye to no.
Bouchard,
aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 13, 27 aye, 2 no, 1 excused. House Bill 24, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 24, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 39, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 39, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 112, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 112, 28 aye, 1 no, 1 excused. House Bill 123, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 123, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 124, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 124, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 125, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 125, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 237, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 237, 29 aye, 1 excused. House Bill 262, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Meyer, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 262, 27 aye, 2 no, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 2, storage tanks. House Bill 3, cease and transfer priority list. House Bill 4, NRC agreement state amendments. House Bill 7, credit for reinsurance. House Bill 9, student ownership and privacy rights. House Bill 13, investment of public funds. House Bill 24, water commission duties. House Bill 39, education resident tuition reimbursement. House Bill 112, EMS licensure interstate compact. House Bill 123, probate estates of non-residents. House Bill 124, uniform trust code amendments. House Bill 125, sealing of trust documents. House Bill 237, Community College Capital Construction, and House Bill 262, Penitentiary Savings Funds, have passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Do you have a point of order? Okay. Before we do that, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hicks.
Yeah, Mr. President, I'd like to re-refer House Bill 86, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, to your Committee Number 2 Appropriations.
Without objection, House Bill 86 has been re-referred to Committee Number 2 Appropriations. Any other announcements? Okay, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, we're going to press right on ahead, Mr. President. We've got a full board today. We've got the ones at the bottom are actually we've got the, for the next 2 days lined out. That may be adjustment on how fast the body deals with the bill. So as always, these things are always subject to change. But with that, Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into Committee of the Whole for consideration of House bills on general file.
You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Senator Boner. She's all yours.
Committee of the Whole will come to order. First bill for our consideration is House Bill 82. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill 82, engrossed, local optional sales and use taxes, an act relating to sales and use tax, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, was referred to Committee Number 3, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Ellis, Kinski, Peterson, and Wasserberger, Senator Peterson, Chair.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that do so with the do pass on House Bill 82. There are no standing committee amendments, and for an explanation on the bill, I would refer to the good senator from Sheridan, Senator Kinski.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Members of the Senate, this is a pretty straightforward fix-it bill. The fact pattern is this. There are some of these taxes that can be imposed in a greater or lesser form. For instance, in my home county, the bed tax, so-called bed tax or travel and tourism tax, the 4% on a hotel room, can be assessed on a citywide or a countywide basis. Most counties, it's imposed on a countywide basis. In our county, for reasons of history lost in the mists of time, it's a citywide basis only. And every time there's a discussion about putting on the ballot to extend it countywide, people hesitate because they're afraid if they put it on a countywide ballot and that's lost, the city tax will be lost with it. Now, some lawyers tell us that's not the case. Other lawyers tell us that is the case. This bill would fix that in the case of the lodging tax and all the other optional taxes by making clear that if you want to go for an increment on that tax, that is a separate and distinct ballot proposition that does not impact any other taxes on the books. Likewise, the economic development tax can be imposed by voters in quarter-cent increments. So if a particular county had already a half cent on the books and they wanted to go for another quarter cent, there's a question from the lawyers as to whether if that extra quarter cent fails, whether it would pull down the half cent already on the books. This amendment would make clear that you can put an increment on the ballot to the voters without jeopardizing any of the other optional taxes already on the books. So let's go to page 2, And we'll start with line 10. This is language that you'll see repeated. Insert, if a county seeks to increase a tax rate previously approved by the qualified electors of the county, that increase shall be separately proposed and voted upon, provided that the total amount of the separate propositions is subject to the limitations specified in Wyoming statute, so forth. That is, that it can't exceed a grand total of whatever the grand total is. On page, so then what we do is we simply go through the bill and repeat that language for each of the various optional taxes, whether it's the resort optional tax, the local bed tax, economic development tax, the capital facilities tax, the optional sales tax. It simply goes through each relevant section of the statute and repeats that exact same language so that we know that we can vote for an increment without jeopardizing what is already on the books. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd urge your favorable consideration of the body. I'll stand for questions.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I made an error. There is a standing committee amendment, and it's a good amendment. And I would move standing committee amendment. I'll have it read in first. Thank you.
House Bill 82, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to engrossed copy, corrected copy, page 3, line 17.
Mr. Chairman, I would move standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 82 and ask for the body's favorable consideration on this good amendment. This is just a better defining. I'll give you the first example, and then it repeats itself on page 3, line 17. We begin by saying if the proposition was to increase the amount of the tax, and then we delete authorized and insert adopted by, and then delete of on line 18. It better explains basically the better wording we thought as the Revenue Committee as we reviewed this to better explain and better, understand these propositions as they were going to be brought up on the ballot to the voters and that we're going to be voting them in or out. So, and then it just repeats itself, the same change throughout the bill on each one of these proposals or propositions. And so the Revenue Committee felt this was a good amendment, and I would stand for questions on the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion on the amendment? Okay, seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 of House Bill 82, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. That amendment passes. We're back on the bill. Any discussion? Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to be sure in the way I read this bill.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I want to be sure that when I read this bill, it doesn't affect the way we get to the optional taxes in terms of how the counties do it, and requires a vote of both the cities and the counties as well and move that forward. I don't think this interferes with that at all. I just want to be sure.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, the question I have is on the capital facilities tax and how this might be implemented and what the distribution might be in regards if you have a city that passes the capital facilities tax and subsequently the county comes in and passes a capital facilities tax. Are the revenues going to be distributed as if the whole county implemented the tax, or is there going to be some kind of a distribution that's different than that?
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, to answer the President's question first, this bill would not change in any way the requirement to go to the voters as is currently enacted into statutes. It simply clarifies what happens when there's a vote for an increment above and beyond something that's been previously approved. So there would be no change to that. For my good friend, the second question, this would not impact the allocation of the capital facilities tax. I could be wrong, but there is not an opportunity for either a city capital facilities tax or a county capital facilities tax. That city-county split, to the best of my understanding of the statute, appears only with respect to the bed tax. The other optional taxes are county-wide. The distribution of a capital facilities tax is by the wording of the ballot proposition itself. Typically it says, shall there be a capital facilities tax of X millions of dollars to build something? And that might be a county project, might be a city project, might be a little bit of both, but this would not impact that at all. Likewise, the optional sales, optional 1 cent, which is a general fund tax, that is distributed on the basis of population. It's voted in on a countywide basis, is distributed to those residents of cities, towns, and non-urbanized areas of the county based on population. That's fixed in statute and is not impacted by this change as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
This is a question as I read about that. What happens? I got two questions. One is, I'm assuming that then if there's an increase and then when it comes up for renewal, that is it all just one proposition for the renewal of the entire tax, or is it then going to be two propositions? That's question one. Question two would be, this only talks about tax increases. Is it possible to have a ballot proposition for a decrease but not a repeal of the entire tax? And if so, I'm not seeing that type of wording in the proposed bill.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, this is a progressive. The questions get tougher as we go along. I will take my colleague, the senator from the Windy City's last question first and tell him I will have to research that one. My inclination, without having looked at the statute books, is that I don't believe there's a provision for repeal of any of the optional taxes in law, but we will check and get back on that one, assuming we pass this on committee of the whole. The second one is about renewal. So let's take them one at a time. The bed tax is for 4 years at a time, I believe, without having the book in front of me. So if you have an initial penny or an initial 4 cents on the bed tax for the city, and that is extended countywide, I believe upon renewal it would come up on a countywide basis. But I'll have to check with LSO on that one. On the optional sales tax, those are for renewal 4 years at a time. So it depends on when the renewal of the underlying penny came to ballot. If the existing penny and another penny came on the ballot at the same time, they would both renew at the same time. If there was an existing penny on the books and 2 years later they went for an incremental penny, those two would then renew sequentially every 4 years. On the capital facilities tax, those do not renew based on the a calendar, but rather on the amount of funding that's outlined in the capital facilities tax. I'm 99.9% certain there's not a repealer for the capital facilities tax, because it's common that those are funded, that a bond is issued in conjunction with the capital facilities tax. So the capital facilities tax is not a renew every 2 or 4 years. It remains in effect until the amount of the tax specified in the ballot proposition is raised, at which point it automatically expires. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any more discussion? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would tag on to my colleague from Sheridan and reiterate that was the whole intent of this bill, was to better define to the electors and to the commissioners and to local government leaders what was taking place there. There was some misunderstanding of what are we voting on? Are we voting on eliminating the entire tax or just the optional tax? And so going back to page 3 again with the amendment that we had put in, it would read as follows, starting on line 16, if the proposition was to increase the amount of the tax originally adopted by the electors, the defeat of the proposition to increase the amount of the tax shall not repeal the proposition originally adopted by the electors. So the original tax wouldn't be not be in jeopardy. All you were voting on was the proposed increase on that tax. So I hope that was the whole intent of this bill, was to better define so everybody was on the same page for these elections. And the rest my colleague answered perfectly. So any other questions we would entertain?
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. So I think what I just heard was that if, let's take the optional sales tax, let's take the optional lodging tax. And so there is a, and I think what I heard was that those get renewed every 4 years. And so if after year one or after year two of that, there's a new proposition to increase that to whatever's allowed by statute. I understand the purpose of the bill, but when we come back to 2 years later, is the entire tax then subject to renewal at the 4 year? Or is it only that? And so now we're actually having to vote on these two different are they now two different propositions, or did the two propositions combine into one? So we've got to have two elections every time one of these things hits 4 years, or is there some kind of merger into whether they become one proposition on renewal? I'm still not quite clear on that. The other one would be that what happens if someone in one of the ballot measures decided that they wanted to decrease the lodging tax had been increased for a couple of years, they found out that it was actually affecting, it turned out that it wasn't as inelastic of a proposition as people thought, and so it actually was decreasing stays, and so ultimately they decided they wanted to repeal part of it. And how does that work? Because this only talks about increases, or that just wasn't considered.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, I would repeat to my colleague the question of the repealer. I will need to have a bit of time to research that one. I don't believe there is a provision for repealer. Before I state that definitively, I want to have some time to consult with the attorneys in LSO. It was not our intention to substantively change any aspect of the existing optional sales tax except to make clear that you can put an increment on the ballot without jeopardizing what is already on the books. That was our intention. If there's any unintended consequences, we want to know about that. So the repealer, I'll research. The renewal and the doctrine of merger, I like that. I think I'm going to have to engage in an analysis, optional tax by optional tax by optional tax, in order to be able to adequately answer that one. It's a good question. If the lodging tax is 2 and you have, and it renews in 2010 and 2012, they put it on the ballot to bump it up to 4, do we have to look at that 2% every 2 years, or do we just look at 4% every 4 years? It's a good question and one I intend to get the answer to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any more discussion on House Bill 82? Hearing the question, all those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the committee poll rises to report that I do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 82, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. House Bill 82 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration will be House Bill 118.
House Bill 118. Purchase of Water Rights and Facilities, an act relating to water, sponsored by the Water Committee, was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rise and report that it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 118 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, if I could have that read in at this time.
Green clerk will read the amendment.
House Bill 118, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 7.
Mr. Chairman, I am moved Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 118, and for an explanation of this bill, I'll call on myself. members of the body, what this does is it doesn't go into statutes. This just provides some authorization for both the director of the Wyoming Water Development Office in consultation with the state engineer to pursue a contractual agreement with the current owner of some of the water rights in Healy Reservoir and also Lake DeSmet up in Johnson County. There's currently about 6,800 acre-feet of water rights that the current owners would like to negotiate a sale to the state of Wyoming for. Some of those water rights, and I don't have the exact number with me right now, there is some territorial water rights in that reservoir, and then there's some later rights in there. This bill would just allow those to enter into negotiations with the current owner of those water rights. All the related infrastructure associated with those, pumping facilities, transmission pipelines, and the other ancillary water infrastructure associated with those water rights. Currently, there is water rights in Lake DeSmet that can be delivered to Lake Healy through some of that infrastructure. This would allow the Water Development Office and the state engineers to enter into and try to negotiate a contract on that. Once that contract is negotiated, it would have to be approved by the Water Development Commission, but also have to be approved by the governor, and then it would have to come back to the legislature for an appropriations of funds and an order to implement the acquisition of those water rights and the infrastructure necessary to implement that. The Standing Committee Amendment went in the original bill. It basically gave a cap on how much they could negotiate, up to $4.5 million. It didn't seem prudent that when you're buying property that you tell somebody how much you're willing to pay for it before you go into a negotiation. Kind of counterintuitive, I guess, is what the committee thought was. So if you go in there, what the Standing Committee Amendment does is strike the language on 7 through 9 that would have given the negotiated contract shall not exceed $4.5 million. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for a yes vote on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Any discussion on the amendment?
Question
on the amendment. All those in favor of Senator Hicks' motion that we adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 118, please signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That passes. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I stand for any questions on the bill.
Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe my colleague from Baggs said 6,800 acre-feet. I believe it's 68,000 acre-feet. And as I remember, on the Lake DeSmet, it's owned by, there's a private ownership up there as well as the counties own some of that water. Maybe you could delineate and tell us the difference in how the ownership is. But the other thing, Mr. Chairman, is, seems to me if they go out and negotiate a contract and then they come to the legislature after the Wyoming Water Development Commission has approved and the governor say, here it is, and we're left to say either we're going to give them the money or we're not, was there any discussion on how that process might work? Seems to me if I was negotiating a contract and I had the money, I'd want to know that I've got the money in my pocket to negotiate. I just don't know how that's going to work. Did you have any discussion? You know, are we getting the cart a little bit before the horse, having a contract in place that's all signed, but it's contingent on us appropriating? I like us being involved in the process. Should we be involved in maybe to approve the contract and the money or something like that?
Senator Meyer.
Yeah. There was some discussion on that. There was an amount in the original bill. We took that out because it's kind of been our understanding that if we put an amount in for something that we're going to buy as a state, lo and behold, we come right up to that amount. So we took that amount out. I think when we come back and they negotiate a contract, there'll be a dollar price in there, and then we can take a look at it. If we disapprove the money, then, you know, the contract goes with it. So we will have that ability to actually review the contract, and without the approval of the money, we could say on the terms of the contract, if we don't like it, you know, we'll go back in and modify this, and we'll give you this much money and see whether or not it goes forward. From my perspective, Mr. Chairman, of that 68,000 feet, there's only about 12,000 acre feet of the territorial rights that's probably worth having. The rest of it's going to but we'll find this out during the negotiations, you know, what the O&M is and what our share is. I think Johnson County has the rest of that water up there. Essentially, this has been water that's been around since the 70s, been through several owners, never really has been beneficially used to much of any degree. So it's a beautiful lake, great fishing, and it's a cheap price that we'll probably get it for, but I guess we'll have that discussion when we find out what the bill might be.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to figure out what exactly this bill does. It authorizes the Water Development Commission to go ahead and negotiate for water. I don't know that they've ever needed legislative approval. The original intent of the bill was to appropriate the money for the negotiations. With the money removed, I see no point in this bill at all. And as to the ownership, the private ownership, I believe, is a South African company. They've abandoned the project they were going to do with the water. The other publicly owned was owned by three different counties, and my own county, Campbell County and Johnson County. And Campbell County and Sheridan County both pulled out of it because it wasn't worth the amount of money it was costing to maintain it. I believe Johnson County owns it in its entirety now, and they're not real happy about it. So, as I said, I don't see the point of this bill in the first place.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just for some clarifications, this did not appropriate any money. It just said that they can't negotiate a contract over $4.5 million. On the other issue is my understanding, and at least visiting with Johnson County, they kind of like their part of the reservoir. But there is some discussion, and I think that there is a private owner up there right now this water was originally developed for an energy project, and that energy project's now looking like it's defunct. It's just not cost efficient, and they've basically said that would entertain the opportunity to sell those water rights to the state. Only thing this does is just authorize the commissioner or the director and the commission to enter into a negotiation. With that, vote it up, vote it down. It is what it is.
Senator Meyer.
Yeah, and just there are some uses for that water in the event that Montana puts a call on. And they've put a call on one of the streams up there, I think, two out of the last 4 years. So there is a possibility that you could transfer some of that water over to Montana and mitigate some of those later water rights being shut off. I think it's 1950 or something, some of those direct flow rights in another part of the state. So the state does have some interest in that regard, and that's probably the biggest interest that the nexus for, having the state have control of that water.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, on behalf of the bill, in support of the bill, I would ask that you vote it up, not vote it down. And I will speak on behalf of Johnson County. We like Lake DeSmit, and we like the interest we have in Lake DeSmit. The purpose of this is water where if it is acquired by the state, the point of diversion will be changed further upstream so as to enable the construction of the Bull Creek Reservoir, which is an off-channel storage facility that we're probably 10 to 20 years away from getting constructed. But this is a critical piece to be able to fulfill the vision of 10 in 10 or 10 in 20, as the case may be. We have to acquire these rights in order to change the point of diversion in order to fill the off-stream reservoir of Bull Creek. So I would urge your support and allow us to take the next step in what will be a very long and complicated process, as is every attempt to capture water in the state of Wyoming.
Any more discussion? Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It really doesn't talk about that. I guess, you know, I'm for buying water. I think that makes a lot of sense. But it really doesn't say anything about another project. And the other question I would have, would this money come from Water Development Account 3, I would assume? Or would it be 1 or 2 if we get to that point? And then what are the costs to maintain it in terms of where that money would come from and how much it would be should we proceed with the acquisition of it?
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, and the answer to that question is it not sitting on the Select Water Committee? I don't know what the discussion was as to where the potential funds would come from if they negotiated a contract. Right now, the way I read the bill, that's open-ended. But I can ask that question and get back to you on second reading to see if they've already looked at designating an account that where that would come out of. Potentially could come out of account 3, which is the reservoir account, but clearly not be involved in the discussion. I have no idea where that money would come from at this point in time. But I will get back with you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, two questions. If we do wind up buying this, does anybody have any notion of at least a ballpark of what it's going to cost us in operation and maintenance as an annual expense? Are we buying into a big annual expense here? And second question, if they can't find a use for the water in Lake Desmet, why do you want to set up another reservoir construction project that may not have a use for the water either then?
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, to my friend from Bates Creek, the cost of operation of the lake is currently being absorbed by Johnson County and all the other holders. As to whether there'll be a big or a small cost come back to the state as a consequence, this is something a question that I'll find out the answer to and get that to you. The question as to the utilization of water. You know, I hear this all the time with respect to water projects. Gee, do we really have a use for it? And my answer is, when they turned Las Vegas into an oasis or Arizona into an oasis, nobody asked those questions. It just went without saying that if you have the water, a use will be found for it. And I believe it's incumbent on us in Wyoming to do everything we can to capture and put to beneficial use all the water that we can, trusting that our economy will grow and develop in proportion to the amount of water that is available to it. Every acre foot that flows out of the water, over time, eventually somebody downstream starts to use it, and if they're using it before we do, when we go to the Supreme Court, we lose. We can talk about our water law and our autonomy and our states' rights all we want, but if somebody downstream puts it to use before we do, it's gone when it comes to the Supreme Court. So we need to develop these water as with the greatest sense of urgency and alacrity possible, trusting and believing that the consumptive uses will be there for them. The usefulness of this compared to the usefulness of the water that's in Lake Desmet now is a function of the point of diversion. If we are to acquire this water and move that point of diversion back up onto the mountain, we then have greater options as to where this water can be diverted to and the use to which it can be put than we do now with the water flowing down into Lake Desmet. We have a limited ability to move that water once it flows downhill to Lake Desmet. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, I kind of sat silent. I am on Select Water, and I think the water's got considerably muddier with the explanation here. this is a kind of interesting project, and I have a few questions to bring. One is sustained yield on the thing, because when we ran it, it doesn't hold a sustained yield of the use of that water. It's actually allocated to the point of the rights are getting used. Second is explanation, there is an additional expense. We tried to go to a level two water study on this, which I don't believe we got done. There's a lot of questions around this project. Lastly, as far as water, and I am in favor of doing it, that water's been impounded since the 70s without anybody using it. The odds of somebody picking it up, sometimes things that look cheap are not quite as cheap as they look. And my contention is whether we buy it or not, that water will still be standing in DeSmet 50 years from now with somebody there until somebody finds a use for it. If the state's got a good use for it, I'm great with it, but I'm yet to have seen that. Lastly, I'd like someone to answer what kind of strings the Game and Fish has got into it, because they signed an agreement with Johnson County on a recreation use that's a 99-year lease that was never explained very adequately to us in committee, and I would like someone to explain that to us as well. Thank you.
Senator Kansky.
Mr. Chairman, the Lake DeSmet Game and Fish deal, which it's not even germane to the discussion here. It's a whole different set of water rights than is at issue here. And yes, if we do not do this, this water will still be impounded in Lake DeSmet 50 years from now. The purpose of the acquisition is to change the point of diversion so that we can get the water to where it's needed to be without having to siphon or pump it out of Lake DeSmet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any more discussion on the bill? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I think I'm changing my mind. I'm going to vote for this bill. I was not aware of the proposed Bull Creek project. I am aware of a land swap that took place between the state and a private landowner from land in Sheridan County for land in Johnson County, and this actually may make a good bunch of sense.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, some of the testimony that we had in committee is there is a lot of infrastructure associated with this. So some of that infrastructure is now approaching 40 to 50 years. We don't have a good idea on what all of that infrastructure would cost. Clearly, that's probably going to be negotiated in a price, or at least we would hope that would be negotiated in a price. With the issue on yield, that's probably true when you get into the later water rights, but when you've got a territorial water right, and getting back to what my good senator from Goshen County talked, that's really the water rights that are valuable in that reservoir. Because if you have a later water right, even in light of the other potential project and change in the point of diversion, if it's junior, you still can't divert. So the real value to the state is, for future water development opportunities, is to acquire those territorial water rights. Above and beyond that, given the nature of the yield and the late water rights, they just don't have much value to them, especially when we look at the big scheme. So, this provides an opportunity to go in there and negotiate. We would hope that our state engineer and our director would be astute enough to understand the nature of water rights and the value of those, plus on the bigger picture of replacing water rights in the Tongue and the Powder River system and be able to do modest diversions and future expansion for other communities within there. It just says go out and negotiate a deal and bring it back. That's all it says.
Any more discussion on the bill? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Hicks' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that, do so with the favorable recommendation of House Bill 118, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. That motion carries. House Bill 118 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 21.
House Bill 21, Secretary of State Certificates of Authentication, an act relating to certificates of authentication sponsored by the Corporations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Agar, Case, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 21, Secretary of State Certificates of Authentication. Mr. Chairman, I'd ask that you yield to Senator Nethercutt to discuss this bill.
Senator Nethercutt.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senators, you have before you House Bill 21. This bill was brought forth by the Joint Corporations Elections and Political Subdivisions Interim Committee through really the request of the Secretary of State's office. What this bill does is it allows for the Secretary of State to create rulemaking authority and provide statutory authority for certificates of authentication and or apostilles, which is a term I was unfamiliar with before this bill, but an apostille certificate is used to legalize a document for use in another country. And I really think everyone should say that word at least once a day because it's kind of fun to say apostille. And we all feel better for doing so, apostille. So really what both of these particular processes do is they authenticate documents for use in foreign countries. The apostilles specifically, if you look at page 2 of, or I'm sorry, it doesn't actually provide the specific information, but what I have learned is that apostilles are sent to countries which signed an international treaty of The Hague, and certificates of authentication are issued to all other countries who did not sign the treaty. So that's the distinction between these two. However, in their purpose and their effect is really just to allow these foreign countries to know that the document that they are reviewing from the United States and from Wyoming is authentic, is original, and that country can rely on it. The practical application of this particular process really is used in foreign adoptions, death certificates, birth certificates, divorce decrees, those types of legal documents that may be relevant to people in both countries. So this particular bill allows the Secretary of State to issue those certificates of authentication and apostilles, allows the Secretary of State to promulgate rules and regulations regarding how to properly implement the certificates of authentication and apostilles. And then also on the bottom of page 2, going into the page 3, just updates the statutory section to 91303, allowing for the certificate of apostilles and authentication to be used. As of additional note, this increases the fees that the Secretary of State usually administers. Usually to get a document certified by the Secretary of State costs $3. But for these ones going to foreign countries, it's increased to $10 for maybe a package of documents. It's not to exceed 100. These monies do go into the general fund. I'll stand for questions and ask for your favorable consideration.
Any discussion on the bill?
Senator
Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, page 3, line 11, we're charging a whole $3. Is that exceeding? Is that too much to be charging for our great seal? $3.
Any more discussion? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I my question was kind of along the same lines, actually, but it's over on page 2 on lines 8 through 12. So the Secretary of State shall collect a fee of $10 for each certificate or apostille issued presented to the section, but not to exceed $100 for the same transaction or occurrence. And I have very, very limited experience with these. I've done a couple of them on some property transactions, but I didn't quite understand how that worked, how we have $10 a piece, but not to exceed $100, unless we've got to have a bunch of apostilles all at once. So anyway.
Senator Nethercutt.
Mr. Chairman, so the $3 fee really applies to certificates of authentication really for within the state. These certificate of authentication or apostilles, as contemplated by this bill and as outlined here, are for foreign documents. And so it requires a little bit more work from the Secretary of State's office, but not a lot. So we want to be reasonable for these fees. So typically what they're doing is they're verifying that the notary public that maybe witnessed the document, is authorizing the document, actually is a certified notary public in the state of Wyoming. So they're just doing that double check, which is fairly easy and simple. Frequently with some of these foreign adoptions, there's a significant amount of paperwork that comes in, and so all of the documents need to be certified. That can get costly, so they want to limit that amount. So it's just a way to be reasonable, and these amounts were brought forth by the Secretary's office.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, further, the testimony in the Joint Interim Committee was that often where you have a lot of these in connection with the same document, it's with something like a foreign adoption where a Wyoming citizen is adopting some child from a foreign country, and you can need just multiple documents. And if you don't put the upper limit on, you place quite a burden on our citizens. And once you've got one of them, doing the multiples doesn't cost that much extra. So that fee and that limit makes sense. With regard to the question that was asked about the $3 fee, that's a general fee in the statute. If you tried to raise it in this statute, you'd arguably have two subjects in the same bill. So we didn't feel it was appropriate in the interim to structure the bill to raise that $3 fee generally. We just did it for these things in this particular bill.
Any more discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, that do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 21, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. All right. House Bill 21 is passed committee of the whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 36.
House Bill 36, engrossed, obsolete laws, an act relating to the general revision of laws, sponsored by the Management Council, was referred to Committee Number 12, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Hastert, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? What's your pleasure? Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was a little bit late on this. I'm not sure who's supposed to actually do this, but I move when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass on House Bill 36, obsolete laws. And we're going to pass that baton over to Senator Hastert when you get a moment.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate. House Bill 36, obsolete laws. And this is what happens when you don't make the committee meetings and you get assigned to do tasks. Anyway, the main part of this bill, the main focus, there was a lot that happened 17 years ago. And as you recall, the Y2K, there was supposed to be a meltdown of all the computers and computer systems and government around the country, around the world. And so there was laws put into effect. This bill primarily just eliminates the Government Claims Act references to the Y2K. So if you go to page 2, you'll start to see some of the references out for the Y2K on to page 3. At the bottom of page 3, though, however, this one here is a little bit different. There's a few House amendments and a few other items that they found. So on the bottom of page 3, starting with line 20, and then going on to page 4, at the top of the page there, that amends the simple assault and simple battery, respectively, by removing references to Wyoming Statute 62501, E through F, and these subsections were repealed in 2014 and related to assault and battery on a House member. In 2014, domestic assault was created and domestic battery was created, so that's why those were removed. Then on the bottom of page 4, again, relates to Y2K, the Government Claims Act. The same on page 5 throughout the page. Page 6 then was another amendment that was added, that 166112 amends the reference to 921016, and these provisions provide for bonding in state-funded capital construction project. The earlier provision was repealed in 2016 when state-funded capital construction projects were removed from the Department of A&I and placed in the Construction Management Department. Then we go on to page 7, and again, references to Y2K government claims. Page 8, the same. Page 9, at the top of page 9, line 2 is into 23-2-110, purchase of preference points for moose or bighorn sheep licenses, deletes a reference to 23-2-101B, which was repealed in 1999, to the current Wyoming Game and Fish license schedule for moose and bighorn sheep, which is contained in 23-2-101. Bottom of page 4, or page 9, 27-2-109, references amendments to change the reference. This here on the bottom of page 9, the top of page 10 through the middle of the page to line 12, simply changes the reference from Department of Employment to Workforce Services. We have merged those two agencies, so it just eliminates that archaic language. And then the bottom of page 10, again, is the Claims Act, and page 11 is the repealers, and it's just the first one is a definition, and 31-2-206, obsolete provisions provided for staggered vehicle registration in 1990, and then 39-15-105 and 39-16-105, which provided for sales and use tax exemptions on electricity produced through renewable resources. These exemptions expired completely by the terms of the paragraphs on June 30th, 2012. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, that's the bill.
4 minutes and 8 seconds.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, there was reference to repealing something relating to an assault with a House member, and I'm trying to find out what kind of a House member it was, Mr. Chairman. Is that the kind of a assault that can occur when somebody insults your spouse or your child and you need to take care of business that way? Or is that the kind of assault that can occur when a House member messes with your bill?
Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, to the good tall senator, I believe it's the latter.
Any more discussion on the bill? Okay, seeing none, are you ready for the question? All in favor of Senator Von Flaher's motion that when the committee in whole rises to report that, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 36, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. House Bill 36 is passed committee of the whole. Next House Bill for our consideration is House Bill 38.
House Bill 38, School Finance Interfund Borrowing, an act relating to school finance, sponsored by the Education Committee, was referred to Committee Number 4, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, Pappas, Rothfuss, and Wasserberger. Senator Pappas, acting chair, was re-referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Hastert, acting chair.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Chairman, move when the committee to whole rise and report it. Do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 38 and defer to Senator Ellis.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 38 is a good little bill that we passed out of the committee. And just wanted to walk you through what this bill does, but to do that it might make some sense to look at the statute itself. If you look at 21-13-13, this deals with distribution of funds from the school foundation account. And so subsection A states that each year the state auditor, on certification from the state superintendent, shall draw warrants on the state treasurer for the amount which is to be distributed to each district from the foundation account. Subsection B states that the state superintendent determines the tentative allotment of the foundation funds to which each district is entitled. Then you see on subsection C, and says that 15% of each district's entitlement is paid starting on or before August 15th, and then 10% of each district's entitlement is then paid on or about the 15th of every month. So here's where we start seeing some changes. In subsection G, this allows the state superintendent to make some adjustments on how those funds are paid out. Districts, in a sense, can demonstrate a financial need, which might allow them to adjust their cash flow. So to do this, districts do something we call interfund borrowing, but they must repay the foundation program account. So here, if you look at the language, you can see in subsection G, if the school district pays back this amount by December 15th of that year, they're not charged interest. December 15th is roughly the middle of the way through the school year. If the district doesn't pay back this amount, then they must repay by June 15th, roughly at the end of the school year, and they are charged an interest rate pursuant to 2113-316A, which sets this rate at 6%. So what this bill does is it changes that repayment structure. The bill eliminates this mid-year payment by making payments due not later than June 15th, and the bill also eliminates the interest charged on this interfund borrowing under 2113-316. So to ask you to take a quick look at the fiscal note, you'll see a large number there of $22 million. But if you read this fiscal note carefully, you can see how the money is moved from these accounts and more or less is adjusted so that there is a net zero effect on the school foundation program. If you look at the assumptions, you'll also see what's happening here. In practicality, most of the school districts that receive advance payments in accordance with this statute do repay by December 15th of each year. And so since 2011, only one district has carried the loan past December 15th, and that generated about $57,000 per year. So due to the lack of frequency of school districts doing this, the department estimates that the elimination of interest payments will have little or no impact on the school foundation program. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on the bill? Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just have a question about the fiscal note, which states that it's indeterminable or has a zero net effect of this transfer of funds, but what about the interest that could be earned? Oh, no.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just looking to see if we could bundle up a whole bunch of questions. We're talking about essentially state's money, so we're shuffling money back and forth to ourselves. So it's not like we're earning interest or making money. We're really just shifting dollars around. So these earnings are a bit of a fiction because we pay them to ourselves.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, if, as I understand it, looking at the bottom of page 2, we're striking out the repayment by December 15th, letting them go forward to June 15th. And I wonder if we aren't creating an incentive for the districts to just not repay that quickly and hold on to the money, and then we will have less pooled interest earnings on the foundation account. I wonder if we aren't putting in an incentive that is going to hit the foundation account.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that's a valid concern. I don't know. This is a joint education interim committee bill, so I'd ask if any of the members who helped work on this bill during the interim have a response to the good senator from Natrona County.
Any more discussion? Oh, Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, I actually don't know, but I'll look into it. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe some other members on the committee can recollect what we did there.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I you probably already said it, and I just missed it because I was trying to follow along elsewhere in the bill. But how much, what are the interfund loan borrowing? How much is that? And, what have been the high points or the average, or if you got any information on that over the course of a year? And then following up on Senator Scott's, my good friend from Bates Creek, following up on his question, I understand that these are out of the Common School Permanent Land Fund. Is that right? I think that's where this money is borrowed from. And ultimately, if it's out to schools and they're not paying any interest, there's going to be an opportunity lost on that money. Now, I'm not saying that, still trying to work through that. It is coming out of one pocket to pay the other, but those funds provide a significant amount of a source of revenue out of the funds out of the Common School Permanent Land Fund provide a significant source of income revenue that offsets other taxes that are paid. And so there is some opportunity cost that's lost here. And so I'm still struggling with this a little bit because I'm trying to figure out really what the net effect is. I see the $22 million, but I'm assuming that's the lost 6%. But there still is an opportunity cost of if the Common School Permanent Land Fund is averaging at 4% or something like that in the year, that's not going to be there, and that's interest that will not be available to fund, that will not offset other taxes, and will ultimately that lost income has to come from somewhere else. So I'm just trying to sort this all out right now, and if there's somebody who can help us with that, I'd appreciate it.
Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, a little background on that. We've worried about cash flow with regard to the rebate and recapture districts for a number of years. Several years ago, maybe 3 years ago now, we had some legislation that came through that tried to smooth that cash flow out, where the disbursements were normalized closer to the point where the rebates and recaptures were not dramatic. And the intent of that was exactly the majority floor leader's concern, where if a district held on to the funds too long and basically kept them in their local account, then they would gain interest off of those, and it wouldn't be interest going back to the Common School Permanent Land Fund. That said, it's not a perfect system. This legislation does not amend that system. There certainly is more work we could do. It would take a lot of work. It would take some interim work, and the Education Committee is certainly up to that if that's what the body would like to see. We can try and smooth that out further. The concern here with the 6% is that, again, it is simply taking money from one pool of money in the state of Wyoming and handing it to another, where we have distributions out and we've got cash being held in districts, and how that's managed ends up leading to us paying interest to ourselves as just a cash management concept. So, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that if we're concerned with the opportunity cost lost by distributing funds or having funds out deployed to the districts too early, that is something that we can address, but we can't address it through this piece of legislation. We could address that through some interim work where we again try to find a way to narrow down the timelines for the rebate and recapture process, recognizing that districts have cash flow requirements that are entirely independent from when the state receives revenue and when the districts receive revenue. So, Mr. Chairman, we can look at that, but this legislation doesn't really get at that problem.
Senator Scott.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I will confess I don't understand the intricacies of this end of the school finance, but with the removal of the incentive to repay these loans by December 15th, the district then could keep the money they have borrowed until 6 months later in June 15th. And it would sit in their bank accounts, presumably, and do earn whatever they might. The fiscal note says that's potential $22 million involved. If I do my math right, 1% for a year on that is $220,000. We're talking about a half year, so it's $110,000 for every percent. If the full $22 million comes, if the difference between what the districts can earn and what the state can earn with its larger pool and larger, more sophisticated abilities is, say, 3%. You're talking about this costing us potentially up to $330,000. So that puts some sideboards, and you can figure it. Maybe it's 4%, which would be $440,000, or 2%, which would be $220,000. That's the range we're talking about, I think, Mr. Chairman. So the question comes, why do we need to remove that December 15th date which I understand hasn't been exceeded, but what one time was the testimony. Are we really doing any good? It does look to me like, Mr. Chairman, it is going to cost something, and the question is how much, and is it worth it to remove that, or are we better off without this bill and keeping the December 15th date?
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thanks, and that's, I guess that's my concern. I'm assuming that the anticipated revenue decrease is $222 million, excuse me, if I'm reading that number right. And so that tells us that that's 6% interest on $367 million. And so that's apparently the number that was figured on, is that's the value of the interfund loan, or the amount of the interfund loan, or the lost interest would be a 6%, would be on $367 million. And that's the problem. I think that what happens with this bill, unless I'm missing something, is we create an opportunity for the local school districts to arbitrage by using interest-free loans from the state and not applying their own funds and their own funds to pay that. And so, if we want to do that, I understand that I don't think you want to overcharge. I don't think you want to create a disincentive or a problem. But what you don't want to do is create a perverse incentive for districts to hold interest-free money and earn whatever 2 or 3%. So I think the solution may be to come back and this interest rate, maybe the interest rate should just simply be a different number. Maybe it should be their cost of capital is or what they're paying on. Because right now, what I'm seeing is a really significant opportunity and quite frankly, as a financial manager, that's what I would do. I would invest my money. I'd earn interest off every dime I could, and then I'd pay my loan back on the day it was the last day that I could do without paying interest.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. That's exactly on track. We went in this appropriation. We spent almost an hour on this bill. Exactly, and they finally got me beat off on it, and now I'm back to where I understand what I was trying to get to. The explanation was one pocket to the other, and that's absolutely correct if it's all interfund. But the truth is that big fund draws an interest rate, and it's got a cost to it. And, you know, if we're at 6% or 4%, it really ought to return at least whatever that fund's returning to the state, so that it at least stays whole. Otherwise, what we're doing is another subsidy back into our school program in reduced interest rates. We also should be asking them to use the reserve accounts to a certain percentage first, because these guys got reserve accounts that they're drawing interest on as well. And, you know, this is a double-dipping system that we've got going on here with our schools. It's allowing them to double-dip, and they're sophisticated. These districts are very sophisticated, and I fully agree. I think this is ripe for some second reading amendments, if not maybe a tip over.
Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this interfund borrowing has to do more with the cash flow at the school foundation level rather than the district level, where we have revenue coming into the state over the course of the year, and we need to be able to fund out to the districts. So we've got the Common School Permanent Land Fund cash flowing the school foundation program account. Read the fiscal note and you'll see more detail about how this is operating. So we're borrowing from one state fund and paying back another state fund. This is before it reaches the district. The districts cannot game this. And I misled the body a few minutes ago because I was thinking we were into the district cash flow. This is prior to it getting to the district. This is the state borrowing from the state to pay out to the districts, regardless of the cash flow with regard to rebate and recapture. So my apologies to the body. I was thinking it was that step. But this is us cash flowing the school foundation program. So state treasurer to state treasurer moving funds and then paying a 6% interest rate because the state is borrowing from the state. So, Mr. Chairman, my apologies to the body for being a little bit confusing there. It's not when it gets to the district. It would not be gameable.
Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to go back to my original question, which is,
essentially this. Regardless of which fund it's going into, and I understand the net effect, do we lose any interest out of any particular account as a result of this from fund to fund?
Senator Office?
Mr. Chairman, the answer is yes, because we're spending money that would otherwise be in the savings account. So when it's in the Common School Permanent Land Fund account, it has the potential to receive earnings off of the investment value of that portion of the fund. As it's being cash flowed out to the School Foundation Program account, so paying for schools, then obviously that cash is being used, it's liquidated, and you have to, at that point, then take a loss on whatever your investment revenue would have been as a result of the investments through the Common School Permanent Land Fund. So there is an expense to the state. But, Mr. Chairman, I don't know who would make up for that because, again, it is just the Education School Foundation where all of the money resides. So there's no real place to remedy that. It would be great if we didn't have to cash flow it, but that's sort of how our system currently operates.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I really have some reservations about that explanation. Look at the specific language, Mr. Chairman. At the bottom of page 2, where current law is any district receiving a payment under this subsection and repaying the foundation program by December 15th of that school year shall not be charged interest after December 15th. The district shall be assessed interest 6% rate, et cetera, and they have to pay back by June 15th. You strike that language out, and the districts don't get a charged interest until June 15th. There is an incentive for the districts to hold that money until June 15th, earn what they can on it, and that is a extra subsidy to the districts that come in for an interfund borrowing. And that could increase the amount of interfund borrowing, but it also for sure tells them don't pay it back till June 15th and get what you can. And, yeah, that'll give the districts a little more money, but I would submit to you, Mr. Chairman, with our larger funds, we can probably earn more than they can. It would stand to reason that we could. We can manage them more in a more sophisticated manner, and we do. And that then the funds are available generally and not just to the particular districts that happen to game the system. So I have, Mr. Chairman, major reservations about this bill and what it's doing because I think you look at that incentive you put in there, they'll use it.
Any more discussion? Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Great discussion on this wonderful bill, and I apologize for not having had the benefit of sitting in the interim committee that developed this work, but just want to draw your attention to a few things. If you read subsection G in its entirety, you know, we talk about how this section applies to subsections B and C of this section, and this is gives, if you look at the language, the state superintendent shall for any district qualifying as the determined by the department for the school year. Looking at their entitlement amounts, it's not going to be, I don't think, the most excessive number we've ever seen, equal to or less than 20% of the foundation program amount computated under 2113-309P. I am not familiar with how these determinations are made, but I just wanted to highlight that there are some sideboards about how much can be accessed for this cash flow analysis. If you read further on sections, you know, line 10 on page 2, talking about provided payments from the school foundation program in the amount not to exceed one-fifth of the foundation program amount computated for the district for that school year. I think we can do some research and give you some numbers so that this doesn't seem maybe as extreme as it could be. And, you know, maybe it warrants further study into whether or not June 15th is the right date. This does away with that. But the school districts have to pay these back regardless. So maybe moving that back to December 15th makes some sense. But I'd encourage you to vote for this bill, and you know, we'll get you more information.
Okay, any more discussion? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, general question for the Joint Education Committee, Mr. Chairman. What harm do we do if we kill this bill?
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, none, probably. I can just tell you that this bill came up. And I'll tell you, we thought we had a pretty common sense approach to what's going on here. And, it just made sense. Why we charge an interest, from the Common School Land Fund to foundation program, why we charge an interest. Looked pretty simple. Obviously not very simple. And we'll try to get some answers for you by second reading.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To just respond to what harm is done, I think just looking at this fiscal note, it begs the question. I mean, we're creating balancing our books, offsetting expenses, interest expenses, so that we have a net zero effect. It begs the question of why we are doing this if we're having to balance it out on the back end. I think that's one issue is why are we doing that then to begin with if we're trying to make money on ourselves?
Senator Bouchard.
Mr. President, I mean, this reminds me of when you go into a tire store and they have the zero interest and it entices people to purchase. I think we're doing the same thing that with our schools here that has got us into this mess in the first place. I think if there's a cost of doing business on this money, and it should be up front, and it should be paid up front, and I don't think we should take it on the other end on this on the interest.
Any more discussion? Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't going to stand up on this one, but I did sit through the interim, and we did have, Mr. Chairman, a lot of testimony on this bill. This was a request that came forward from our business managers out across the state, and they do have, some cash flow difficulties in the months of December and on into spring. It seemed pretty common sense, but I agree with the chairman. Obviously, there's some questions we need to get answered. As far as what harm it would do to not pass it, hey, we've lived in this system up to this point, but it does create some headaches in terms of getting to the local bank and borrowing money so that you can meet a payroll at the end of December, and then the state money comes in, in February or whatever. So we did have extensive testimony, and it was that's the reason for the bill, is to try to smooth that out in your districts back home. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, I would encourage the body, clearly there are two sections here. If some members of the body don't like the fact that the school districts are allowed to maintain the loan past the December 15th and go all the way to June 15th, then that's an easy amendment. But it's separate from the interfund borrowing, which, Mr. Chairman, I was discussing, which is the all in the treasurer's office, state to state, and we just basically balance the cash flow by paying the interest out of one account back to the other. So perhaps that could be something that we could look at in second reading and get some more answers for the body in second reading. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, one more explanation on interfund borrowing is, it is a zero back to hand to hand. But the money in the original pot's drawing money for the state. When we draw that money out, that opportunity cost is gone. So this is not a zero net sum. I represent, if this is to go forward, that it needs to have some interest rate on it. The state earns money, and really we're losing the opportunity cost of that money out of whatever fund it is if we're drawing it out for whatever reason. Doesn't matter if we're borrowing it to kids or borrowing it to schools. When you pull that money out of an interest-bearing account, it no longer bears interest.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To that point, then I think it begs the question of why allow interfund borrowing at all and allowing for the districts a little bit of cash flow ease. Anytime we're going to allow them to have some cash flow flexibility, it won't be sitting in an account where it's accruing interest. This is the current situation we've got out there. We recognize that there are some instances where school districts need a little flexibility with their cash flow. These are funds that are repaid back. And it's not going to be a perfect system where we've got dollars in an account drawing interest. So I guess that's the policy question we've got to have. But I think that this still speaks to just some simple logic of, to again, the senator from Albany County's point, these are all, when they're switching hands, state dollars. The repayment part of it is in a separate section that doesn't really have anything to do with that concept. So I'd urge you, again, to vote for this bill, and, you know, if we need to look at some second reading amendments, I think that's very appropriate.
Any more discussion? Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 38, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
That motion carries. Division. Okay, division being called. All those in favor, please stand. Ayes. All those opposed, please stand.
Oh, glad we did division on this, Chairman.
14 noes, chair votes aye. Yes, I am glad. Okay, so House Bill 38 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 291.
House Bill 291, Department of Health Facilities, an act relating to the Department of Health Facilities, sponsored by the House Appropriations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chair.
You've heard the reading of the bill,
Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that the committee of the whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
Okay. You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. You guys have a motion carries.
Okay. Thank you. This is going to take a little. This is probably, it's always.
Your face is a little red.
Something like that.
Standing committee report.
February 13, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 1, to whom was referred House Bill 87, engrossed, return of victim's property held as evidence, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, and Hicks. Noes, Senators Kinski and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chair.
Messages from the House.
From the House of Representatives, February 13, 2017. Message number 294. Mr. President, the following bills passed the House on third reading by the votes indicated. Senate file number 3, Select Water Committee Review of Projects. Ayes 58, noes 2. Message number 297. Senate file number 7. Bank Services Corporations, Ayes 60. Message number 301, Senate File number 23, Fuel Tax Appeals, Ayes 60. Message number 302, Senate File 30, Jail Placement Coordination, Ayes 60. Message number 303, Senate File 33, Computer Extortion, Ayes 59, Noes 1. Mr. President, the following Senate files passed on third reading in amended form by the votes indicated. Senate File 5, adopted to engross copy. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting listed amendments, Ayes 36, Noes 24. Message number 296, Senate File 6, Radioactive Waste Storage Facilities. The Senate file passed on third reading in amended form. Ayes 60, noes 0. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting amendments. Senate File 9, Certification of Cases to State Board of Equalization, on message number 298. Senate File 9, adopted, ayes 56, noes 4. The House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting amendments. Message number 299, Senate File 10, County Boards of Equalization, ayes 60. The House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting amendments. Senate File 11, License Revocation Processes, message number 300. Passed the House, ayes 56, noes 4. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting listing amendments. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
We're at that order of business, signing enrolled acts. House Enrolled Act number 12.
House Enrolled Act number 12, being original House Bill 30, an act relating to state parks, historic sites, archaeological sites, and recreation areas.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 12. I so signed. House Enrolled Act number 13.
House Enrolled Act 13, being original House Bill 51, an act relating to pooled fund investment loans.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 13, being original House Bill 51. I so sign House Enrolled Act number 14.
House Enrolled Act number 14, being original House Bill 8, an act relating to education.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 14, being original House Bill 8. I have so signed House Enrolled Act number 15.
House Enrolled Act number 15, being original House Bill 14, an act relating to insurance.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 15, being original House Bill 14. I so sign House Enrolled Act number 16.
House Enrolled Act number 16, being original House Bill 45, an act relating to courts.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 16, being original House Bill 45. I have so signed House Enrolled Act number 17.
House Enrolled Act number 17, being original House Bill 65, an act relating to Public Safety Communications Commission.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 17, being original House Bill 65. I have so signed. Announcements.
We need him. I thought he did the motion.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Majority Floater, do you have a motion?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that we stand recess until 2 p.m.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet this afternoon, 10 minutes after adjournment, in Jonah Room S-27 to consider the following bills. House Bill 275, Engross Drivers Licenses Revisions. House Bill 280, Vehicle Registration Requirements.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Corporations Committee number 7 will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. We're going to meet in the big room, Jonah Room L54, Mr. President, and we may continue upon the noon recess as well. We've got a bunch of stuff going on. House Bill 56, Engrossed Mobile Homes Title Status Upon Permanent Foundation. We're going to continue and finish that up from last week. House Bill 28, Approved Depositories for Public Funds. House Bill 44, Engrossed Board of Professional Engineers and Land Surveyors. House Bill 80, Engrossed Transportation Network Companies. House Bill 159, Engrossed Homeless Miners. House Bill 165, Engrossed Acupuncture Practice Act. Pretty sticky and pointy agenda.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number six, travel, will meet tomorrow morning in Jonah Room S-27 at 8 a.m. to consider House Bill 288 engrossed, game and fish fees, House Bill 270 engrossed, wolf management, trophy game animal, House Bill 173 engrossed, paramutual events, distribution of fees if time permits.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number two appropriations will meet upon adjournment today down at the JAC room, where we will take up re-referred bills, House Bill 23, re-referred House Bill 58, re-referred House Bill 86, and hopefully have a discussion on the Senate actions on the budget.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. As most of you know, tonight is the karaoke night, the House and Senate challenge, and committee number 99 is going to have a real brief conversation at Senator Peterson's desk immediately right now on when you gavel out to discuss a couple of the hits that we're going to do tonight, so make sure you're ready and prepared to defend the Senate honor and that championship spirit.
The only question I have, Senator Hastert, is Senator Peterson ready?
He is. He's more than ready.
Look at that smile.
But he's a trooper. He is ready to defend the honor of the Senate.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, your committee number nine, Minerals, will meet 15 minutes after noon recess at about 12:20 in Jonah Room S-18 to consider following bills. House Bill 183, engrossed, security for on deposit public funds, was held over from the 2-10-17 meeting. Thank you.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a quick reminder to the Revenue Committee, we have a conference call at 1:30 in your office with a governor that was going to be answering some questions about states' conventions. And so that's at 1:30, Revenue Committee. And anybody else who would like to attend and might have some questions about that convention process.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I forgot to ask the Senate Appropriations Committee to meet at my desk here immediately upon recess for about 2 minutes.
Any other announcement? Members of the Senate, I want to remind you that the governor's prayer breakfast is Wednesday morning, 7 a.m. in Little America, and we haven't received a lot of I votes in terms of the senators attending that, so if you just haven't got the information on your desk or something, I would encourage you to try to respond. We'd love to have you attend. Senator Landon?
Mr. President, thank you. I and probably a couple of other senators blew past the RSVP date on that. I just wonder if we can still get in the door. Are we still allowed in?
You're a senator. Never forget that, Senator Landon. You can get in the door, but it'd be nice to let them know, for those of you that passed the RSVP, so they could see that. But I would encourage all of you to attend. Senator Landon.
Mr. President, my prayers have been answered. Thank you.
Any other announcement? You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate will stand in recess until 2 p.m. I lost a pen somewhere along the way. Again.
Drew, you're always a major part of this. You're part of our voice. You're our voice.
She's choreography.
Who's due often?
Where?
No, I've already got
some. This is the Colby's that we have.
All right, some of our players here.
Where's that one? You're here.
Right here.
Right here.
Right
here.
Right here.
She's on it.
And we're trying to involve the new gals.
The new what?
Women senators, not gals, or women senators.
Sorry.